Welcome to the Fire You Carry podcast. On today's episode, we have Eric Eastland. Eric is our engineer here at the station. He's been working with us for a few months. And today we are talking with him about how he was diagnosed with cancer after 6 years on the job, his subsequent fight with that cancer, how he approached it. This will be a good episode if you're facing any kind of adversity in your life. Eric has a great outlook and perspective on this type of thing. Enjoy.
It would absolutely help. And I think that positive mindset with anything sets you up for success, not only just being sick or anything, but trying to achieve a job on the fire department, achieve a promotion at work or whatever, you know. That's why I always tell my kids, because my kids get a little dramatic sometimes. It's like, if you're always focusing on that bad, that's all you're going to see. It's hard not to sometimes, especially now our day and age, where we get so much bad information just surrounding us all over the place. It's hard to keep that positive mindset, but it can be done.
Well, welcome to the Fire You Carry podcast.
Welcome.
We have our friend and new engineer, Eric Eastland.
Hello, hello, hello.
You knew this was going to happen, didn't you?
Captive audience.
Damn. Yeah, you knew it. You knew it was going to go down.
Took so many days off this month, too. Thought I would avoid it, but it's good to be here.
Yeah.
We are happy to have you here. Let's start with, how long were you on the job before you found out that you had cancer? Let's just go right to that.
Right into the nitty gritty. Let's get into it. So 2017, I'd been on, 2010, right?
Yeah.
2010, 2011.
Yeah.
2011, right there. About 6-7 years.
That's not very long.
No. And lymphoma is kind of fast growing like that and totally part of the job. I mean, we get exposed to so many different things.
Tell us about how you discovered this.
Yeah, how'd you find out?
At the time, I was on the squad in Baldwin Park at 29s. I was just working a ton. They let the whole station 154s, like all the squaddies, bit out of that station. So we called it the pit of misery because I was working my shift and like every A shift. So I was just getting hammered like you guys are now, kind of just 5 days a week.
But you're on the squad. You're up all night.
On the squad, up all night. I got young kids. My wife works. So just always tired. Didn't really notice that part. My appetite was always, I'm an eater, so I never had that problem. And I wasn't really losing weight or anything. Always worked out, always tried to stay healthy. Probably put that more on my wife. She's probably the biggest motivation I've had of staying healthy since I met her. But I had a lump right under my clavicle. And I noticed it and I was like, well, that's kind of weird. I didn't know if it was like a bite or just like a cyst or something. And then it was probably 2 weeks after I noticed it, it blew up. Like you could see it, like wearing a t-shirt like this, you could see the bump. I'm like, well, that's probably not good. So
there's things like lipomas and things like that, that blow up on people. And
yeah.
You don't know,
and yeah, I mean, it could be a clogged gland or port, whatever, you know, I've heard guys have the same thing. They go to the doctor and they say, oh, here's some antibiotics, take that. And they find out, oh, wait, that wasn't the right thing. It's actually lymphoma. Luckily, my doctor, my primary that I went to, he noticed it right away and he's, let's act on this. Thank God for him, because he was like, we need to get this biopsy, period. Let's not mess around. That was November. Yeah, right, just before Thanksgiving. And I didn't get a biopsy till January.
Oh, wow.
Just the whole consults and appointments and, you know, getting stuff set up.
So you're still working?
I was still working the whole time. You know, it didn't feel any different. I had night sweats. I did have night sweats. That was one of the things, but I just felt like maybe it's just my body because I'm just pounding it with caffeine and sugar.
Yeah,
and
you're working.
You know, working, burning candle at both ends. So I'm just figuring out it's probably my body reacting to.
Were you pretty stressed during that time while you waited for the biopsy?
Yes. Trying to stay as calm as I could.
Yeah.
You know, but after that first initial contact with the appointment with him and him saying this might be something bad. Of course, your mind just starts spinning. And the probably even the harder part was when I got the biopsy It took them, I want to say, a little over 3 weeks to give me a final answer.
Oh, wow. To actually know exactly what it was,
because it's follicular non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is this pretty rare form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There's so many different kinds out there. It's amazing. So they held off pinning it down and telling me yes, because they wanted to be sure absolutely what it was, which, yeah, I get, but the whole time it's just like you're
in no
man's land.
3 weeks, yeah.
So I had the biopsy. They said about a two-week recovery because it was an incision right at my clavicle there. I decided to just stay off a little longer, and then they told me the results on the phone. You know, I was calling them, like, after the first week, I was calling them every other day, like,
yeah.
Do we got it? No. Yeah, and they called me back, and it was just like, you go numb. You just like, okay. And
how was the reaction with the wifey?
Pretty stressed, you know, very, very worried, of course. She's kind of a worrier, anxious like that. She can't get like that.
And you got young kids.
And we got young kids. So that's like the whole thing that spins in your mind. What's going to happen? What's this? What's that? But I try not to sit in that too long, because it's just kind of like, okay, this is what we got. What's next? Okay, what do we need to do? At the time, I was going through private insurance, and I was seeing an oncologist who we didn't really like, because we had known people who went to him, and he's just kind of dragging his feet. Oh, yeah, let's get this test. Oh, yeah, let's get that test. Do a bone marrow biopsy, this and that. And it was just like, nah, we need to get on this. And
so you wanted to be aggressive, and he was kind of lackadaisical.
Yeah, it's like, okay, what do we need to do to get this treated and get this, like, get on the road, hopefully, to knocking this out? And with that, luckily, at the time, I knew we work for County of Los Angeles, and the return to work who we deal with and getting things like this covered. So with 1014 and all the hard work they did and getting all the presumptive stuff for us, cancer being one of them, heart attack, strokes, stuff like that, it was luckily not any issue with going through return to work, going through at the time, I think we had, wasn't Sedgwick, it was another insurance company that pays for all that, basically. Yeah. I knew the captains in there. I knew the chief in there really well, because he was one of my chiefs back in Roland Heights. So once we got that ball rolling, it was like, okay, let's go. You're going to USC. Go see this doctor, Ann Moorbacher over there. Great oncologist. She was super aggressive about everything. And I've heard horror stories, and I've seen it with a few guys of going through the cancer issue and having to deal with return to work and the insurance company and all that, and them saying, no, we're not going to approve this. No, they're dragging their feet. No,
it's the last thing you want to deal with when you're trying to fight cancer.
Yeah. You just want to focus on getting better and getting your treatments and getting done. And that's just insurance in America. That's the sad part of the fact we pay all this money into these insurances, and they don't want to pay out, basically. But luckily, I went to an IME, an independent medical examiner, because that's what we have to do anytime any major injury or anything. And he's like, 100% this is part of the job. Just the stuff we get exposed to on any kind of fire. It doesn't really matter whether you're in wildland or a structure or whatever. We do what we can to keep ourselves clean. I think we're a lot smarter now than even probably before my time. But there's only so much you could do, because it's a risky job.
I'm curious about this, because there's been stuff that's come out recently about sleep deprivation making you more susceptible mm-hmm. to cancerous things because of the lowering of your T cells mm-hmm. after. And it's curious to me, I don't know if that was even discussed. I know it's a newer thing now, but you think about the time frame, you're mm-hmm. working your brains out, you're sleeping yeah. 0 hours a night.
Yeah.
And maybe you're more susceptible to something than you would be if you were sleeping 8 to 10 hours a night.
Yeah. And most likely, even if it was, you're getting exposed to all that stuff, but sleep is when your body repairs itself, right? You need that. You need that at least 6 to 8. And I don't even now, I don't really get it, you know, with the young kids, but you need that, your body, you need that rest time to regenerate everything and fight off infections and all that. It could be. I mean, it could be a lot of things. That's one kind of the crazy things about lymphomas and certain cancers. You don't know where it comes from. Other cancers guys have had on the job, they say, oh, no, it's like I've heard guys had throat cancer and they haven't been on long enough for that to develop. And that's just a crazy thing. You know, you don't know where it comes from. Who knows what, if it was one incident or many incidents or who knows. But I didn't get too into that. It's like, okay, I know what I got now. Went to saw the independent medical examiner. And those, he was a great guy. But if you don't advocate for yourself, if you don't push, especially kind of with our county, if you don't go like, I need an appointment. I need to get this looked at. I need to get this checked. It could linger on forever. And I told my oncologist, yeah, I went and saw this guy. He said it's going to be, they could take like up to 3 months to give a final report. And she was like, no, that's not going to happen. Called him the next day. Yep, I'll have a preliminary for you. At least you can get it started, and then I'll do my final report later.
Because that report is what you can start treatment with.
That's what the insurance company needs to say, okay, he does need treatment. Mm-hmm. This doctor said 100% it's industrial. It's a part of the job. Okay, get him treatment. So within 24 hours, he had the preliminary to her. Wow. And we were on and running.
Talk about being an advocate as a patient for yourself, mm-hmm. or for a family member. Do you think it was helpful that your wife is a nurse and that you're a paramedic?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because also too, when you're walking through that, as a medic, as pretty good medical knowledge, I grew up in a house of nurses. Both my parents were nurses. So we saw a lot of that growing up young, and my wife's a nurse. She's been a nurse for a while. She is a great patient advocate. She was 100%, you know, we had that freak out period, of course, but once it was on, she on it. Because when you're going through it yourself, you're not thinking about all these things. It's hard to focus like, okay, what do I really need to do to get better? You can, but it's just super hard to stay on track. And it's great to have that outside knowledge of like, okay, little extra things you might not even think about.
We've had conversations with a couple other guys that have had cancer. Not just on the podcast, obviously, in our mm-hmm. line of work, we talk to guys because it is something that is common in our mm-hmm. line of work, obviously. But it sounds like to me that having somebody like that in your corner, I mean, awesome that it was your wife, but we've talked to other people who it was a good friend or whatever, mm-hmm. who was just more organized. I know that for me, hearing you talk about that and hearing previous guests, Jermaine Aguilera is one of them. I would have a really hard time keeping track of all that stuff because I'm not organized like that. And so Absolutely. Having somebody like that, I think sounds like it's an extremely valuable thing. And mm-hmm. so that would be a piece of advice that I would pull out right now is to say, if you are going through something difficult like that, A, mm-hmm. you're stressed out because mm-hmm. you're the one going through it. And then B, if you're like me and you're not organized, find somebody that can help you and just ask. I mean, mm-hmm. hopefully it's somebody like a spouse or a brother or your brothers here mm-hmm. in the fire department, but find somebody that can take some of that burden on for you and yeah. be your advocate. Cause that does, mm-hmm. that does make a big difference.
Yeah.
And that's Jerm was talking about Jason Pike's wife.
That's what I was going to say. Dude. Firefighter Cancer Network. They were awesome.
Yeah. And what incredible work they do. Mm-hmm. And she had gone through cancer herself and just the paperwork that needed to be done, the menial task kind of things, he just mm-hmm. eliminated because of all that help and support.
Yeah. They were one of the first people. I mean, once I told a couple guys, I told my guys like immediately at 29s, once the lump came up and the doctor said, this might be something bad. I said, well, I'm going to get biopsied and I'm going to be off. You're going to wonder why this is why. But then it's crazy how many people came out and said, you know, I've had lymphoma, or I know this guy on the job was had lymphoma. Get a hold of this guy, get a hold of that guy. And Debbie Pike was one of them. Got a hold of her, Firefighter Cancer Network. And they're a national. They're not just for LA County. They're any firefighters. And we could talk about that more later because I'm a mentor with them too. And then getting hooked up with Tom Boulware. He was at Threes at the time. He was an engineer at Threes. He went through the same thing. His wife is, I don't know what you'd call her, like a naturalist, I guess. Really
like a naturopath?
Yeah, a naturopath. They were great. Once I called them, let them know what's going on, they both came over to the house. Wow. It's not something like, I want money. It's like, this is what you need to do. Take these supplements. Like, we could get more into that, like what I went through on extra stuff I took, because there's the Western medicine that's going to, here's chemo, here's an antibody treatment we're going to give you, and that's pretty much it. But there's a lot of other stuff you could do that I did on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah, because, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was your step one, saying you now have cancer, you do get it approved, it's done by the, it's, you got this because of our job. What is the first step? What did you do first? What's your treatment?
After I freaked out, I got into treatment. I got over at UFC, did the whole interview with them, whatnot. And then it was immediately, once they got the approval, we went, did chemo, and we did antibody. It's like an antibody treatment with the chemo. It was going to be 6 rounds, 6 months that we did. And then on top of that, like I said, the bulwarks came over. I took a few extra supplements for like gut health, just immune system boosters, a bunch of stuff like that.
To combat the effects of the chemo?
Combat the effects of the chemo.
Because that just nukes you, right?
Yeah. And there's different levels of chemo too. The type of chemo I got was pretty mild. I mean, I had, after the first one, I had very little reaction. The first one I got, I was pretty run down for a couple days. But after that, dude, I did not lose my hair. I did not lose weight. I would get the treatment. I'd feel bad for about a day, but my appetite was always still there. And I'd be working out the next day, doing stuff to try to keep my body just regimented. And I, even on top of that, being Native American, there's also a supplement I took that I have seen help heal people who've had cancer and not have to go through chemo and stuff like that. So I was doing pretty much everything I could, not knowing if it's going to work, is it not going to work. I figured more I throw at it,
throw everything at it,
the better chance I have. And being fairly young and healthy helped out too, I'm sure.
Can we talk about this tea? Does it have a name?
It's from the manzanita bush.
I know the manzanita bush.
Yes. It's supposed to be drank a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a ritual how you prepare it too.
Yeah.
You got to be right there. You got it. And I'm not going to lie. Yeah. You got to put the love into it. I'm not going to lie. It tastes like straight gasoline.
Oh yeah.
It's like when you drink it, it's like, oh my God.
Is it the leaves? Is it the berries?
It's more the trunk of it.
The bark.
Yeah. It's like a creosote on it or something.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the active ingredient that helps. I've known, aunties and uncles, we're not actually related, but that's how we are.
Yeah.
Like everybody's brothers and sisters. My aunt had throat cancer. She drank it, gone.
Wow.
Uncle had a brain tumor, drank it, gone.
Wow.
So who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
but you were open to whatever it needed to take. And I think that's a pretty neat approach to say, not one thing, let's throw the book at it.
Yeah. And that's what we went through with my wife's mom. She had breast cancer a long time before she beat it. And then when it came, her cancer came back basically, and she passed away from it at a pretty rapid rate.
Uh-huh.
But doing those supplements and getting into that and trying to get her into that, she wasn't really into it. And it's frustrating because you want to do whatever you can. And it's not that, I think it's more that there's doctors not telling you this is okay. She came from that generation where the doctor tells you do this, you do it. And I mean, there's still a lot of people out there like that. Doctors are fallible. I mean, we're human. They call it practicing medicine. So having my wife there being an advocate, doing these things, even though there's not published studies on them, it doesn't hurt anything.
I want to go back and talk about some of the other things you were doing. But before we do that, was your oncologist aware of the other stuff that you were doing? Did you have that conversation at all?
We did, and they're not going to tell you it's okay to take at all because...
But did they tell you not to do it?
I don't think she outright said don't do it.
Yeah, just kind of was...
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's because there's not medical studies
right.
on it.
They don't
like
know.
The Eastern medicine, stuff like that, there's not medical studies. Nobody really wants to pay for that to,
right.
to get it done.
Because there's no money in
because
it.
Because there's no money in it, probably.
Bark is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. You could go out and get your own and stuff like that. But
there's
it has to be
guy.
Taken in a certain way. You know, it's like anything.
I listened to this oncologist. He was on some podcast and he was saying he did like an informal study of his patients over 40 years. And he said the ones that believed in their mind that they were going to beat it did.
Yeah.
And it was something about saying all the things that we can do. He said, I do think that there's some sort of mindset or possibility that has something to do with it. That they say, I believe in this. I believe in the power of prayer. I believe in that. And yeah. And when they said they were setting their mind to beating it, he said that it was like an overwhelmingly positive response.
Absolutely. Because I had that in my corner too, being Native American. I'm very into prayer. I wouldn't call myself religious or whatnot. But I had a strong support group. They're all praying for me, doing the things that we do. We do, it's called a healing ceremony. It's a bear ceremony. And what we believe is that bear spirit takes that pain, takes that sickness away. And being part of that has been huge in my life. I've been in that many, many years. Because I had some nights where, of course, you can't stay positive all the time. I had some nights where I was just in so much pain, didn't want to freak the wife out. I'd go out into the front room and just be out there and just in pain. I had these weird pains in my back I was getting. This was kind of early on in everything. And I'd go out there and pull my bear out and do some prayer and try to focus, you know, and it would help. It would absolutely help. And I think that positive mindset with anything sets you up for success, not only just being sick or anything, but trying to achieve a job on the fire department, achieve a promotion at work or whatever, you know. That's why I always tell my kids, because my kids get a little dramatic sometimes. It's like, if you're always focusing on that bad, that's all you're going to see. If you're just going to, and it's hard not to sometimes, especially now our day and age where we get so much bad information just surrounding us all over the place. It's hard to keep that positive mindset, but it can be done.
Now, was your wife continuing to work? Was there
stress? Yes. Yeah. Yes. She was. She took some time off, and anytime I had an appointment, she was always there. It was like, yeah, I'm going no matter what, which was great. And the support like that, and being with the county and all that, getting picked up by workman's comp, not having to worry about my paycheck. That was just one of those extra things that was, it's a huge, huge relief, because a lot of people go through that. They don't have that, even if they have insurance, and the insurance is picking up a chunk. I remember looking at the actual bill of chemo, and it was like a $30,000 bill for like half a day of the treatments. And that's not including the doctor's fees and the lab fees. And this is just the medicines they were giving me.
Yeah.
Insane amount of money.
That's wild.
That's wild.
Yeah.
What were some of the other natural things that you were doing in addition to the tea?
Like we talked about, I took probiotics for gut health, olive leaf extract. It was like immune system boosters and another immune system, beta glucans, another immune system booster. We were taking, we call them lemon shots. It's natural lemon juice with ginger, turmeric for the inflammation, cayennes, like a blood filter kind of thing, and a little orange juice. And we do those every day.
That tastes really good too.
Yeah. Well, you put enough cayenne in it, it'll burn a little, but those aren't too bad. And actually, I forgot before all this, when I initially talked to the Bulwares, he did the lemon cleanse, and that's what actually cured him. So it's at least 10 days. It's fresh squeezed lemon, maple syrup, and water. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I have the recipe in my phone, but you do this, you don't eat anything.
Yeah.
And it's basically resetting your body, because she talked about you do these supplements, you treat the cancer like a fungus, and that's what it is. It's a fungus in your body that grows and spreads. And you do all these supplements and stuff to keep that in check and try to shrink it. He had a lump in his mouth. He did this cleanse, and right before he was going to start chemo, it was gone.
Wow.
So it's just like amazing stuff like that, that not everybody knows about. And this whole lemon cleanse thing, I have the book. It came from a man. I forgot why he went to the East to find out this cure, but he was going through issues and stuff like that. And he found this lemon cleanse, and he talks about how it resets your body. And I did it for 3 weeks, drinking nothing but the lemon drink.
You're extending, that's basically fasting.
Yeah, basically you're fasting. All you're doing is drinking. Anytime you're hungry, you take a drink. And they say try to drink like 8 to 12 cups a day. And that's actually kind of hard because you're making it fresh. The lemon, the whole thing about the lemon is once it's cut open, after a certain amount of time, the enzymes in it die.
Yeah.
That the beneficial enzymes. So you got to make it fresh every time.
Oh, yeah.
It actually wasn't too hard after a while. The first couple of days were a challenge, especially because coffee. I am a coffee drinker. Yeah. And I mean, the first day was tough because you get the headaches and you don't got the caffeine in you. And the other hard part is in the morning, you drink a laxative tea at night.
Oh.
And in the morning, you get up and you drink 2 pints of salt water flush.
Oh.
And it cleans you out. Oh, I will not lie. You need to be right by a toilet about 5 minutes after it. I will not lie. Because I went to drop the kids off at school one time. I was like, get out of the car. I got to go. Brutal. I thought I could make it, but it was very close. But I would be making food for the kids and it wouldn't be like, I'm hungry. I don't know if it was the mindset of I need to do this to try to shrink this.
Yeah.
And everything like that. It didn't work for me in that sense, but maybe it prepared my body for the chemo to get it because I did that right before I started chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that helped. Who knows? You know,
right.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. There's some talks about extended fasting. Like Peter Attia talks about it quite a bit, that doctor. And he was saying how when you're not, your body is not processing food and going through that whole process, it allows itself in a fasting state to repair on the cellular level whatever's going on. And it might not be cancer, but it seems like that makes sense to me. If you're kind of starving the fungus, like you're saying, that maybe it can help repair itself.
Yeah, and the amount of sugars and stuff we put in our body and in the kind of American society diet, that was another funny thing too that we really got into is looking at the foods we were eating. My wife's mostly vegetarian. She'd eat some fish and stuff like that. And kind of weird, the only thing she would eat would be processed turkey slices.
Well, those are delicious.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's pretty good, especially like you get the Columbus stuff. It's good.
Columbus.
We'll take a sponsorship from Columbus for that one, right?
Native American eating Columbus. Yeah, that's great. That kinda,
it wasn't my best moment. Okay.
He didn't actually found the company.
No, they just used his
name.
It was fine.
And his likeness.
Yeah. So we started watching documentaries and stuff like that on just what's in our food, the mass processed meats and stuff like that. And I eat cleaner now. I don't eat totally clean. I mean, I don't know why I don't have diabetes yet. I'm a sugar junkie and my mom had diabetes.
Aren't we all?
Which is always a scary thing, but
yeah, you cooked us ribs tonight.
I know they were delicious. Weren't they?
They were delicious. They were
ribs,
but getting better sourced meat.
Yeah.
Just cleaner meat. I order from a company and I mean, I have the luxury of the extra money to pay for the better food for my kids, for myself, and just how much cleaner it tastes than going to the market and you see the meat.
Are you using ButcherBox?
Yeah. ButcherBox is the one.
We know the ButcherBox.
Yeah, I do that
so
too.
Good. So good.
But that was something on your mind to say that I'm going to watch. This is a kind of we press pause on just going blindly into the world. I think, you know, when I gained weight when I was on the squad.
Oh, yeah.
And because you're not sleeping, you're eating crap. And I think because you start getting cravings because you were up all night. Somebody bring in a box of donuts, I would devour
them.
Yeah,
just go down.
And then you'd miss lunch. And so we were going to like Jack in the Box at 3 in the afternoon or whatever. Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, it's almost like you took a complete pause to say, let's reset this whole system.
Yeah. And being off work and being at home and having the time to do it, of course. I mean, with our jobs, we get busy. I mean, just coming from being out in the desert was another thing is like work, 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 work. Oh, you know, we were going to cook, but we have to get something to eat. We got to feed our buddy somehow. Let's go get something over here real quick. Not the best choices, but you know, you got to get fuel in you. And that's why I say I do what I can. I'm not like I'm going to eat meat and cheese all the time.
Well, I also have a sugar addiction and yeah, I go off the rails.
Absolutely. But you are very regimented. I will give you this. You are very regimented. You have
the man
will of a stone wall. I swear.
I love when he goes off though, because it is off the regimen.
Yeah. We have diabetes in my family too.
Yeah.
And so that is always a fear for me and the kids. It is something that,
yeah,
while we haven't had an experience like yours, we have kind of gone down the same journey, it sounds like, of mm-hmm. learning more about what's in your food, what you're actually eating, mm-hmm. and making those cleaner choices over time. And it's been a long journey for us. We started out many years ago trying the paleo thing, and then we've gone down the road since then. It's been like an 8-year journey, and we're not perfect by any means.
Absolutely.
But making those decisions do make a difference, regardless of what you're going through, regardless mm-hmm. of if you're just trying to maintain a healthy weight or potentially fighting a cancer.
Yeah. And it's just like what you put in your body, like your point of view, like we were talking about earlier. If you focus on that bad, you're going to get bad. You put a bunch of sugars and processed stuff in your body, you're going to feel bad. And I was eating so clean at the time that when I would have that funky meal of fast food or something, I would feel like total crap.
Terrible. Yeah.
And even now, I mean, my kids don't eat much fast food. We eat In-N-Out maybe and a couple other things here and there, but they don't eat McDonald's. My boy mm-hmm. ate McDonald's one time and got sick. My grandma fed it to him. He's like, nah, I've never eaten it. And every time I threaten him, I'm like, you're going to get McDonald's.
We're going to McDonald's.
No!
You got to get the McRib.
So, and I mean, they're weird kids because that's the staple. I remember growing up.
That's all we ate.
Yeah, yeah. And Taco Bell and all that stuff. And you know, I mean, we go on road trips. Of course, we're going to eat fast food, but I always recognize that when I eat it, I really don't feel that great after.
This is how messed up I am. While you guys are talking about your journey, I was thinking about Heather's making these like double almond things around the Christmas time. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's coming up.
We could do that for Thanksgiving. We're working Thanksgiving day.
Oh, we got to do that. Yeah. She got some. These things are. I like
you're not working Thanksgiving? You got it off?
I'm on going on AV.
Oh,
bum. Lucky.
But yeah.
Well, you're going to miss out.
I'm craving those things, dude. Maybe Heather, if you're listening, make us those double almond things.
Twice-baked croissants.
Oh, they're fantastic.
We're going to get recall for Christmas.
We go in the morning because that's when we gave your people a big old feast, and then you kind of turn around and turn the tables on us.
That's true. We're seven to celebration. You're like,
it was death and destruction.
What tribe is your background?
I mean, I'm a mutt. I mean, my dad was Swedish and like European mutt. My mom was Chumash and Northern Mexican.
But the cultural things that you're doing.
The cultural thing is Chumash that we've gotten into, started many, many years ago. My brother got into it. Probably 30, no, let's see, how old am I? 45. Probably 20 years ago, he got into it and kind of opened my eyes to it. And at the time, I was friggin' wild, man. I'd always been searching for that kind of spirituality, whether I liked it or not. I grew up Catholic, grew up in a Catholic household, mass every Sunday, doing the thing. I went to Catholic grammar school, I went to Catholic high school. And high school is always that time when your mind changes and you're like kind of start questioning stuff, and a lot of the stuff kind of turned me off. So, you know, I was always out there looking. I felt like looking back on it now, I was always searching for that something that felt like home. And once I found this, I remember going to my first lodge ceremony that we did, and I cried like a baby the whole time because it was just so beautiful and I felt so connected. And ever since then, it's a part of me and it's a part of my family.
Do you know if all those traditions have been passed down? Are they just oral traditions where they've just been passed down from one person to the other? Or has anybody at any point put them into writing?
There has been some recordings and of, I think his name was J.P. Harrington. He did a lot of research with the Chumash, because we were mission Indians. I mean, we create a lot of those missions and stuff like that and went through all that. But he did a lot of research and tried to write down a lot of the teachings and stuff like that. But the main brunt of it is being at ceremonies, being at lodge, learning all the stuff I have learned along the way, some through books, and I do have a few books that have the old traditions on what they used to do, but just being present and learning the etiquette almost of the ceremonies and stuff like that is mostly, it was oral tradition. It was never really written down back
right,
in the day.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what you lived. Yeah. There was nothing else to do. There wasn't YouTube and video games to entertain you.
Those were better times.
Yeah.
I mean, YouTube's valuable.
I used it to
learn how to run a podcast, but other than that,
I use
it's
to how to fix my truck and stuff every now and then, or learn a guitar song or something.
Now, did your mom participate when she was growing up in anything like that? It was more like your brother found more of a cultural identity through it, and then it was an exposure. That's interesting.
So, and it's crazy. So my grandma, she's my favorite growing up, man. She pretty much full-blood Mexican, grew up in that Hispanic Latino household. And it was more from her side of the family, because my grandpa, my mom's dad, was from northern Mexico, like Yaqui area, stuff like that. She was from Bakersfield, which I don't know how they migrated over there, but they were just Catholic. I mean, Mission Indians, like I said, grew up in that household. The very strong spirituality, both my grandma and my parents. Actually, both my parents. My dad was at one point going to be a priest, and at one point my mom was going to be a nun.
Yeah.
So that faith, I mean, that faith carried my mom through a lot of stuff, because she was a diabetic. She had both legs below the knee amputations. She had a myriad of health problems. They told her, you have a short time to live. And she made it probably 15 to 20 years after they told her that. And I think a lot of that had to do with her faith and every day. So when my brother got into that, it was crazy, because he got into that and they started researching and looking, and we hooked up with that bear ceremony, and he started getting into that. And they get, what happens is, once you start going around a lot more and you kind of figure out your path in it, he was gifted a bear. And that's what, when you are gifted a bear, you don't necessarily have to dance that bear to dance that spirit for that healing ceremony. But he brought it home. My grandma said to him, the medicine has come home finally. And growing up, she was never like that, because she spoke perfect Spanish. She never spoke a word of Spanish to us, never taught Spanish anything, because she was a Mexican Indian. And growing up in her days, it was not cool to be a Mexican or an Indian.
Huh. It wasn't celebrated like it is now. Yeah.
My great grandma's birth certificate said white, because either back then you were black or white. And when you got a birth certificate, and we see pictures of her, she's beet red Indian.
Yeah.
Like you can't fake that, you know? So all that with her growing up, she was never any a part of that other than her spirituality with the Catholic Church. And once that came around, and my parents were always accepting of it, because I think they always gave us that strong sense of, like, how I am. Doesn't matter to me. The religion doesn't matter. It's your spirituality. You could be Catholic, Christian, Buddhist, Islam, whatever. As long as it gives you that good basis to be a good person, and you're spiritual, and it helps you on your path and doesn't hurt others, then it doesn't matter. That's what we pray in the lodge. We say, bring them all in. I don't care if it's Allah, Buddha, or whatever, bring them all in. So
I'm listening to this book right now. This is a side tangent. I'll probably take this out. I'm listening to this book, and it's about the founding of our nation. And of course, a lot of things happened, but I think one of the things that happened that was super positive is they intentionally designed our system of government to allow for the freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. And they were very specific about the fact that the government couldn't come in and pick and choose which religion they were going to endorse. They had to be separate from that, but they had to also protect everybody's right to follow their religion, to have that religious freedom. Up into the point of, if you for some reason had a religion that didn't go along with the moral values of the country, that was somehow hurting another group of people or was being negative in some way to the culture, they did create that system that fostered the ability to have the Buddhists, have the Muslims, have the American Indians and what they were doing, and have it all coexist, because so many of those faiths, well, of course, I believe my faith is the one, but all those faiths, they have similar moral values, and they do work together in creating a tight-knit society in their, you know, in their groups. I mean, you're talking about your support system and how it was or is that group of people who follow the old ways of that tribe. Mm-hmm. And that's super positive. And when you have something like that, that keeps a society together, and not having them at war with one another, yeah, or, you know, this is the chosen one of the mm-hmm. government, and so that's the one supported, but having it be diverse, I think, is one of the incredible strengths and not something you see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the ceremony we do, it's amazing because I'm Chumash, my family's Chumash, but like the guys, some of the guys we hang out with are Lakota. One of the guys who one of very good friends, Sean, he's amazing man. I've learned so much from him on this path. He's a white guy. He's a tall, skinny white guy. You wouldn't even think he had anything to do with any kind of Native American, just looking at him walking down the street. But he's been a part of that probably 30 years or 20 plus years. Him and a couple other buddies that I've known very well since my brother met him, they all kind of got together and started doing these things and researching and getting into it. I've known those guys for 20 years since my brother met them. But I didn't really get on that path till maybe 4 or 5 years later.
Was the Chumash tribe a peaceful tribe?
I mean, everybody always competed for resources. I think being coastal Californian on inland there, they didn't have to compete for resources that much. It wasn't like the plains where they're a little more maybe warring or stuff like that.
I only ask that because you look like a warrior.
He does. And he works out like a warrior.
That's because I hang out with you guys. I
got
to keep up.
You just got here. We can't count that yet.
Yeah. From what I know, not really. But there was always competition for lands or raids from other tribes.
They were hunting.
I mean, physically back then, you just had to be fit.
You had to fight to survive at some point.
Survive, man. Nowadays, I mean, with the American diet and everything, it just jacked us all up, man. It's crazy.
Have you ever watched, I'm sure you know a lot about this, but I watched a documentary about the Aborigines from the continental Australia, and the whole focus of it was how they lived, what their culture was like, mm-hmm. what they would eat, what they would do, and then what happened when other people, the Europeans, showed up. And then specifically what happened when sugar was introduced to their culture.
Oh, yeah.
And it just wrecked them. Yeah, and it ruined them. And they still are suffering and struggling the effects of that to this day. And they talked about how in European nations, the introduction of sugar happened, but it happened slowly over time because mm-hmm. it was so hard to get, and it was a delicacy, and it was expensive. And so the tolerance was built up slowly over time, over generations. But then they had refined it, and it was everywhere, and it was affordable.
Yeah.
And then they brought it to these other cultures, here included, and it was just available.
Yeah.
And in quantities that people's bodies that didn't grow used to it over time couldn't process. And we see the effects now, even in our cultures that did slowly get used to it. Obviously, it has negative effects.
Yeah.
But that shock of the amounts and the quantities.
It's a drug, man.
It really
is. It's a straight drug.
And you see in those cultures just that horrible effect of it. And I think with alcohol was a similar thing too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That happened. Obviously that happened here.
Oh, yeah. The reservations are just rampant with alcoholism.
Yeah.
Right?
Alcoholism, drugs. And the foods turning and just the lifestyle that had changed for a lot of what happened. I mean, what happened, you know. I remember getting into it and reading a lot of books and stuff like that and getting angry, but it's like, you can't stay angry at the past. You gotta deal with the here and now. You know, that's what I always try to, with myself especially, is just try to stay in the now, no matter what's happening or whatnot, not worry too much about the future. And it's just that whole shift in culture of what they were into what they had to become to survive. I mean, to have not owning land, just being free to roam, to that whole thing of this is your land, this is your little plot, and you stay here if you want. And it's just got to be such a shock, you know.
Let's talk about how long, just to tie up the first story, how long did it take for you from when you were diagnosed to when you came back to the job and you beat cancer?
I was back that September. So I started treatments, got the official word in January. I think February we started, and it was 6 months of chemo. And I was off for like 8 months.
Wow.
And I was back, and I mean, I felt good. I almost felt guilty, to tell you the truth, going to get my chemo, because you walk in to the treatment center and USC is super nice and the staff there is wonderful. And but you see these people and they're either end stage or like totally bald, looking pale and gray. And I mean, I walk in there and I'm looking like this. I'm like fairly fit.
Jacked,
I
have all my hair
jacked and tan, man. And you know, it is almost kind of like feeling guilty, but feeling thankful for catching it early, getting on it, and not having to endure what they were going through.
Let's talk a little bit about that real quick, because I thought about that as soon as I started hearing your story. Obviously, in our line of work, cancer is a very big reality. A lot of us are going to get it. It just is the way of the job. You had it earlier than most do on our job. And you found it because you had an obvious sign on the outside of your body. Mm-hmm. As you're doing the mentorship through the Cancer Support Network and things like that, what are some things that you guys advocate for guys to be aware of so that they can detect it early?
I think with us, it's not even just the cancer, it's the injuries and stuff like that, even heart stuff. You know, we ignore a lot.
Yes.
As firemen, we ignore a lot because we want to stay on the job. Sometimes it's fear of being off and not coming back. I know guys that don't like to go off because they think all this injuries and little here and there, and it's going to add up, and county's just going to say, you know what, you're off.
Retired.
You're retired at 10 years on or whatnot. But it's not going to matter if you keep going for 8 years, 9 years, ignoring all these signs, and then you're dead.
Yeah.
What's the point to me? Cause I was totally that way at first. It hurt this, hurt that, try to be off minimal if I even went off, or just not get it taken care of, ignore signs, chest pains, stuff like that. It's like, is this, did I drink too much pre-workout, or is this the big one right here? You know, I think we as a culture ignore a lot, and I try now to advocate more of, if you're hurt, go get it checked out. And that, I mean, actually, when I hurt my knee, I went to Karazi, one of the doctors, and that's what one of the doctors told me, is like, you guys got to get on these injuries early, because cumulative, you stay injured and you keep working. I mean, I'm doing it right, my elbow's jacked up and I got a jacked up finger. You're kind of doing it right now, but we do that and we get these cumulative injuries. We make it worse and worse. And then when we do go off, it's surgeries. It's extended amounts of time off, rather than even if it's minor, stay off that month.
Get some physical therapy. Taken care of. Yeah.
You see that signs, hey, I'm having night sweats every night, especially when it comes to cancer, because injury is injury. Most of the time you're going to come back from it unless it's something super traumatic. But when it comes to that health side of the heart, having weird spells of whatever, or even kind of signs and symptoms of cancer, you can't ignore it. I mean, you need to get on it.
Go get it checked out.
The sooner you get it checked out, there is that, of course, there's that fear of it's going to be cancer or something like that. There is that fear, but when it's not, it's like, okay, you know what? I got it checked out. That's that, your peace of mind. You know?
Well, and if it is, you're catching it early and now you have a much better chance of dealing with it.
And
I've long felt that we have to, like when I played soccer and you were in college, you had these training rooms and they were full of PT doctors, nurses, and then students, and you get banged up, you'd go right to the training room and they had ice, they had stem, they had tape, they had everything you would need to heal up an athlete. And as occupational athletes, I wish we had something that would be more feasible to just go in and just get checked out and get things taken care of, the little nicks and whatever you need to get. If you need to get an MRI, an X-ray, whatever it is, they had all of that in these training rooms for college athletes. You know what I mean? So I'm like, it seemed like our body is kind of our job, that we should have something like that.
Another department for LA County should have their own. But we've gotten better at that too. I mean, I remember getting on and guys getting hurt and they'd be off for months before even getting an appointment, this and that. And that's a kind of the blessing too. When I had cancer, is getting approvals and getting appointments and moving stuff along quick and being the patient advocate. I mean, even now it does happen. Guys get hurt and they could say, well, I'm not going to see the doctor for a month and a half. And it's like, no, there's things you can do to move that along. And of course we have those guys on the job. And I think that's a lot of our culture too, that if I go off and I got to stay off for a month or two because I hurt myself, guys are going to talk smack at the station, you know, and you got to take care of yourself because it is what it is. I mean, everybody, we all like to talk trash and everything. It doesn't matter if you do it the right way or the wrong way. Yeah. If we're doing it right, we're talking trash about you.
If you're not that talking trash, there's a problem.
There's a problem. Yeah. That means we like you if we're not talking shit about you. Yeah. So.
Let me ask, did the whole process, did it change you? Did you have a perspective change coming back to work? Was it different for you? Did something?
Yeah. At first it was maybe a little fear of like, oh, what's this? This is going to give me cancer again. I tried to stay out of that because, I mean, this is what I do. This is my calling.
It's inevitable, right?
I found it later in life. I got on a little older, but ever since I got on this job, I've been so thankful for it. And I've wanted to do everything I can to keep this job, to be good at my job. So I will do things maybe a little smarter than I did before, like mask up, even do an overhaul, mm-hmm. wear an N95 or something like that. Man, I still see guys pulling the blown in insulation with no mask. It's like, dude, put a mask on. Simple things like that you can do to keep yourself. I've done it before and it's not the smartest thing, but you know, those simple things you could do and trying to be a little smarter and just being a lot more thankful for every day I got. I mean, I think that started even before I got on the job, but just appreciating every moment I have here, you know? I mean, I kind of talked to Kevin about this. I won't get too into it, but we had a little health scare with my wife a couple of days ago. And trying to be positive for her and knowing what she's going through. And luckily it turned out to be nothing, absolutely nothing. But for 2 days, she's kind of tore up,
yeah.
You know? And me, I'm like, let's just be in the moment right now. We're at home, we got kids, we got nice house, we got cars, we got food in our belly. You know, we can't worry about what if this, what if that. Like even when I went through my cancer, if down the line I get these treatments and I die, what's going to happen to my kids and stuff? You know what? It will get taken care of. That's what I try to live by too, is like, if I go tomorrow, I know people are going to be sad. I know my family's going to be sad. I know my kids are going to be sad. But hopefully I've given them enough to keep going. You know, the world's going to turn. The world's still going to turn. People are going to go on and live their lives and do their thing. So I try not to get into that future head. You know, it just doesn't serve me well.
I love all of that. I think what I've heard you come back to multiple times is just the idea that something happens and you can't live in that. You can't stay focused in that. And I love the perspective of that. Our buddy Max talks about that all the time, about living in the past and then living in the future. Mm-hmm. And either one of those, they're just going to depress you or stress you out. And there's really nothing you can do about there is nothing you can do about what's happened in the past. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. And what happens in the future, I can invent 7,000 scenarios and get every single one of those wrong.
Yeah.
And if I spent time worrying about and planning for those things, and then none of those are what happened.
Yeah.
Then I just wasted all of my time and energy and I'm not present, which is what you keep talking about. Being exactly. present in the moment, doing the best you can right now, because that's really all we have. Mm-hmm. I love that. That is a huge lesson.
It's huge. It's amazing, right? Because if I open up my phone and I look at the news, they sell fear.
Yeah.
It's what if this happens and what if this bill gets passed and what if this thing, they sell
just
fear.
Especially right now.
And I look at myself and I'm getting into like a fear-based, what if, where are we going? What's going to happen type of thing. And I don't realize that my kids are riding bikes in the front yard right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? And like, it's such a great reminder. Like when Nolan, you bring it up, it's just like, that we can get so, I mean, like the past is guilt and the future is fear.
Yeah.
And then you're just destroying the present right now, you know?
And I lived in probably a lot of fear and hiding growing up and just pretty much on myself. I mean, Both my parents were very loving and supportive and stuff like that. But I chose to do a lot of things that kept me from achieving my full potential for a long time. I mean, I didn't get on the job till 36. So it took me a while to grow up and figure out my life. And I sat in that fear and I sat in that, oh, I want to do this, but I can't because I'm a low life or whatever, you know, making bad choices and not taking, getting out of that fear and taking that step of overcoming that fear. You know, it's hard to do. I mean, you get in it and it's hard to get out. But I think now, once I stopped doing all those detrimental things to my life, kind of pushing all that stuff, that outside stuff away and focusing on myself to grow and figure out what I really need in this life, that helped me grow and helps me stay in that mindset. It doesn't all, like I said, I'm not perfect at all. I get into it and I'll go days just dwelling on something, a conversation I need to have with the wife or somebody, you know, you have this conversation, like if you have to have a tough conversation with somebody and you run through the scenarios in your head like 100 times and then you go have it and you're like, it never goes the way you thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't hard at all. Yeah, what am I worrying about? That was just a lot of wasted time, man. And then you feel bad for wasting all that time. And I mean, I think I wasted a lot of time in my younger life doing, just being unproductive and self-serving and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm glad I went through that because I think it makes me even stronger now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm night and day of what I used to be and what I am now.
Let me switch gears. Talk about something totally random. Do you have any tattoos that you're super proud of that you want to tell me about right now?
We haven't had this conversation.
Well, just ones you like. Have a couple, one or two.
Yes. So I did used in another life. I worked in a tattoo shop.
Oh, you
so
did.
I tattooed myself a few times.
Oh, you got to talk to me about one that you did then.
Oh, okay. The one that hurt the most was this condor.
Condor right below his knee.
Yeah. So I dug the hell out of my skin and it got infected and it was just the worst, probably the worst tattoo I've ever had because I did it to myself. And I just scarred the hell out of myself.
Well, it looks like it healed well.
Yeah, if you get close, you could see some of the spots. But, you know, I don't know if I have any one.
Well, what's that right there?
This guy right here? Yeah. That's St. Florian, patron saint of firefighters.
Okay, that's good.
I have the Chumash stuff, the dolphins. I have a lot of cave paintings that I've been doing. Got the Sacred Heart with my mom's name. I got the anchor. Because my dad was a corpsman, so I got the Navy anchor corpsman on that side.
I like it.
I got it.
He's the painted man.
I'm the painted man. I like to decorate my temple. probably one of my favorites. This is kind of a funny story. It's a Day of the Dead skeleton on my calf here. I had a guy come in. He wanted this tattoo. And I'm not one to like, give me that off the wall.
Yeah.
I did that actually a couple times. They're getting covered up. But he came in and he's like, yeah, I want this Day of the Dead skeleton. I want a maracas and just looking happy. And, you know, I'm real into Day of the Dead too and honoring the ancestors. And that's coming up too. We got to build our altar. But he came in and I drew it up for him. And I remember drawing it going, man, I really like this design. This is awesome. And he came in and put a deposit down and everything.
Yeah.
And I finished it. I'm like, I hope this guy never shows up because I want this tattoo. And he never showed up.
Wow.
I don't know what happened. But you never came back in, and it's probably one of my favorite that I get a compliment on a lot.
It's great. What's the ethics on that? If the guy comes and gets it tattooed on his body, do you just feel like you can't use it now because he's got it and you'd be twins? Or is it just kind of a...
Because to me, I got my bachelor's in art, and I've always been into art and stuff like that. And that's why I became a fireman. I don't know why.
Yeah. How'd that work?
It makes total sense.
It's total sense. Yeah. You know, I got my bachelor's degree in art and I became a fireman.
I'm an art dealer.
Yes. We get in that another time or whatnot. But to me and the guy I worked for was like, we like to do original pieces on people.
Okay.
If they come and pick, I want that off the wall. Let's change it. Let's make it yours.
Yeah.
You know, most of my artwork that I have on my body, I've designed myself, except for a few pieces that doing like the traditional Asian style or whatnot. And like my back, I have the huge dragon that the guy freehanded on me. I don't want a stencil off though. I don't want that dragon. I want you to draw one on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of this stuff I have drawn myself to make it my own.
Right.
To me, it just gives it more meaning. And every one is a different stage in my life that I have gone through at the time. I got the Asian writing. This one's Spiritual Wisdom. These two are probably my favorite, Spiritual Wisdom. And the literal translation of this one is Giving Happiness to Those in Hell, or Helping Those Who Are Suffering.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, what does that mean? Yeah, give me powerful, the kanji off the wall. It's like, I actually worked at an Asian shop and he's like, yeah, these are like almost Buddhist principles. These are great things to get on you. And they're reminders for me every day. I got these really at a time in my life where I was suffering myself, like hidden suffering, putting myself through a lot of stuff. And I'm glad I got these because I see them every day. I look at them and it just reminds me that this is what I'm here for. It's like, I'm here to grow spiritually every day, and I'm here to serve and help others.
Yeah. That suffering. One on your left arm is like perfect for your, for our line of work.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of other things too, of course, but
I looked it up while we were sitting here and it says, the actual translation is, I like soup.
Soup.
That's terrible. You do hear soup. Those horror stories.
Yeah.
Dumb American.
Because I grew up in Alhambra, and it turned very Asian when the older I got. Alhambra is very different today than it was. And I worked in a shop right down the street from my house. And dude, Jess Yen, he's my tattoo. Great guy. He's world famous, man. Owns a couple shops now. But we would see people come in, they'd be like, oh yeah, I got this in another shop. And he'd be like, he's Taiwanese, so he reads that stuff, no problem. He's like, no, that's not what it's
cold-blooded.
Yeah. No regrets.
No rag rats.
Rag rats.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall when you're in your fire oral interview and they're saying, how does your bachelor's in fine art apply to the well...
You know, I think I did include like one of the questions was like project leader, or you had to do teamwork or something like that. And we did have a art project. I think it was for sculpting that we had to build like a totem pole almost, and everybody had to do their piece.
Oh,
and it was kind of like everybody's just like, hey, I'm going to do this. And I'm like, let's make this work together. And okay, you know, you don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Yeah.
I kind of pumped myself up maybe a little more than I actually
leader.
Did. But, you know, I kind of related that into it because it's like, yeah, I got a bachelor's. I got to work that.
You got to work that angle.
So, I mean, nowadays it's almost like a bachelor's doesn't matter. What I tell my kids, unless you're getting into like business or something really focused, engineering or whatnot, your bachelor's just shows you could go to school and earn that piece of paper, you know, a lot of times, because a lot of times I went a long time to school. I went to like 10 years of college. I should have been a doctor. But I went to Long Beach State and
a lot of the coolest dudes I know went to Long Beach State.
Yeah. We have a lot of Long Beach State guys on the podcast.
And probably one of the reasons I got the art degree is while I was at Long Beach State, I was having way too much fun.
Oh,
I was
there.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I went. That's why I went so long, because, you know, I was living the college life, just being a maniac. And probably like a year before I was supposed to graduate, I kind of sobered up and got my head straight. And it's like, well, I'm so far into this art degree. I love art. I did art shows, and that really wasn't my scene because just the people there. I mean,
a lot of turtlenecks,
a lot of weird stuff going on there. It just wasn't my scene, you know. I mean, it was cool and all, but I couldn't see myself trying to hustle art all the time like that. I always loved video games, and actually my brother does programming for video games. But I felt like I was too far along, and it just wasn't really my thing. I love drawing, I love sculpting, like building stuff with my hands. And I was like, you know, let's just finish this art degree because I'm like a year away from graduating. Let's just finish it. Let's get it over with. So that's kind of why I got the bachelor's in art, it's studio art. And I got a minor in Native American studies, which was cool. I had some great teachers and learned a lot from that too.
Now, you said you kind of got your stuff together.
Mm.
Is that something that you've kept over time, as saying to watch yourself with drugs, alcohol, whatever it may be? Because I know our culture It's kind of a work hard, play hard kind of a thing.
Yeah. So a lot of times I've felt kind of like a fish out of water. I mean, here I feel like we gel a lot and we have a lot of the same values and family and stuff like that and our backgrounds, and it might be a little different, but right now where we are in life, we share a lot of that same values. I've been to other stations where it's, yeah, let's go party. Yeah, we're going to the river this weekend and this and that. And it's like, this is not me, dude. I put a lot of time into that before I got on the job, and I let it rule my life. And I see it in some of our, it's everywhere. I see it in some of our people on the job, and it's sad, but you know, they got to go through their own thing, because I could see some people that it's ruling their life. I mean, they have to have that drink on when they get off work and stuff like that. And nothing wrong with that. Everybody's got their own path. People can handle it. I'm not that one drink guy. I can't go home and just like, I'm going to have a Jack and Coke and sit by the fire with my pipe. No.
As a gentleman, right?
No, I'll have the whole bottle and we'll go from there, you know? So, I mean, and it does nothing for me. I've gained so much in the last like 15, 16 years, 17 years now, that it's just not, it's a gamble for me. If I go drink or do something stupid like that, what's the point? To me, it's not going to solve anything. If I'm having a tough day, if I'm having a fight with the wife, kids are driving me crazy, that's not going to solve anything for me. You know, it's just going to prolong.
It only delays. Yeah.
It delays the inevitable, you know, and it makes it worse, because I add to that problem. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, because I will add to that problem, drinking or not. I could add to any problem you got. Don't worry about it. But getting that clarity in mind has helped me so much, and helped me get out of the fire department and focus on, you know, this is what I want to do with my life.
I'm just like you. I'm right in the same position where when I was drinking and that was part of my life, I wasn't the type of guy that could just, you know, have a casual beer or two with a meal. Like, it never ended up that way. It was a problem.
Yeah.
And when I cut that out of my life, it did open everything else up. And the clarity of mind that you have, and the fact that that's no longer something that I was trying to use as a crutch or a coping mechanism, which of course that never goes well. It's not.
I mean, it could be anything too. It doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. It could be TV and sex or whatever, dude. Whatever you want to fill it with. It could be food. I mean,
yeah, I'm the same way. I drank like my dog eats. It's just like fast and hard, you know? Like, you know, have you ever seen a dog eat? That's the, and so, yeah, I think there's just a maturity into saying that there are some things for some people, and that was not one for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look culturally or genetically or whatever it is, that's not a good road for me, you know?
No.
But I think it's very encouraging though, that people like you or me or whatever can have a path and then choose to have another path as a mature older man that's gone through some things. And now look what you're doing with your family and what you do and being of service as your job. I mean, it's incredible. So I think that's very encouraging to anybody that could be out there. You can change your life. You can stop whatever you are doing. There are ways that you can do that. And then you can have a completely fulfilling, wonderful life and be able to go through things like cancer or kids or whatever without it. And you don't need, like, you know, some people, that's the first thing they hear is, I got cancer. Let's go pour me a drink.
Truthfully, that probably never crossed my mind when I was going through the whole thing.
Incredible.
It wasn't one of those things. It just didn't seem like an option to me. Maybe other things did, but it wasn't something. It's like, I grew up in that lifestyle too, with Chicano, growing up around the Chicano culture, 5-year-old parties, there's keggers and drinks everywhere. And you know, that's how we grew up. It was always drinks at the party. Both my parents drank. And in my family, alcoholism's rampant. And I've had a few relatives die really young from it. I just had a cousin that passed away at the beginning of this year, drank himself to death at like 54.
Wow.
So, and he just couldn't get it. You know, he tried and tried, but he just couldn't get it. And it's sad, but I mean, that's what happens. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you think about the example that you said. I watch our children, they emulate what you do, you know, and what's normalized to young is what they're normalizing. And I don't know, you might break that generational curse by being having some diligence in what you daily do, you know, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. We always tell my boy, don't ever start drinking. Just because we see his personality and how he is with stuff and stuff, I said, don't you ever start drinking, because you're going to run. He's going to be the one that runs with it. So we'll see. He's got his own path. And, you know, all you can do is be supportive and do what you can for him. But
yeah. And it's one of those things, like, to your own self be true, knowing yourself, knowing me, like my pilot light is always lit. Yeah. And it's like a drink takes that to the roaring, you know what I mean? And so like I just know that. Like if I just keep it off, my pilot light is lit. I'm still kind of a wild man, but you know what I mean? But I don't need any of that to make more chaos in my life.
Well, before we close this out, you've talked about your wife, but you also have kids.
Yes. Oh.
How many kids do you have?
I have three. I have a 20-year-old. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. My 20-year-old, she's actually my adopted stepdaughter. I've known her since she was 5. She's always been mine, pretty much. And that's been a blessing. She's taught me infinite just patience and unconditional love. You know, never had that in my life. And she was the only one until she turned 10. So we were together. No, I met her about 6. So yeah, a good 4 years. And then her brother was born. And I mean, I've always treated her like she's my own. And she knows. And my boy is 10. He's a firecracker. He's so loving. And he's just one of those good kids. I mean, all my kids are good kids. And my 7-year-old, she rules the house. She is the powder keg that rules the house. She is personality to the max. But it's so funny because she gets around people, she gets shy.
Oh, yeah.
But once she gets to know you real well, she'll let you know.
Starts to come out, yeah.
She'll let you know.
That's awesome.
I think it's pretty cool. I know you and your wife work out together, done some challenges together, you know, races and stuff like that. I think that's a really cool thing, because how long have you guys been married?
We got married in 2010, so 11 years now. And this is the first date. One of the first dates we went on, we went hiking. I was smoking at the time, and she took me straight up a hill. I was like, we had to take breaks like every 5-10 minutes. Like, hold on, I need a smoke. And she was like, she at the time was like, I don't know about this guy. But she knew I was fairly healthy other than that. And she has been the main source of me eating well and taking care of myself and getting into working out. I mean, that's kind of when I started my path down the fire department, just before I met her. So I was already trying to get that motivation to stay fit, get fit, stay strong. And she just kind of pushed it to the max, because she was always a workout fiend, eating super healthy, super clean.
Yeah, she's doing rope climbs here. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's great to have that partner. Like, we go on days off, go to the gym. Like I said the other day, we beat ourselves to the ground here, and then I go home, and I'm like, I don't want to do anything. She's like, hey, let's go work out. And it's like, okay. Because it's just great to have that time with her that's what we do. We're weird. We go on vacations, and we're like, okay, where's the gym? Or like, let's get a little workout, let's get a little circuit in before we go and start our day. We're just weird like that. And it's great because it pushes me to stay healthy, and it keeps us each other accountable, you know. Although we feel like we're 70 years old most times in a 45-year-old body, because we're just broken, beat down. She's got tore ACLs, and, you know, she was playing soccer and tore ACL, and that hobbled her for a year, and that just drove her nuts. You know, nuts. But we are very active, and it's great. I mean, I wouldn't have it. I couldn't see it any other way. I mean, 20 years ago, I would have been, yeah, right. You know, freaking work out every day. But I mean, it's been great. It's been great.
I love that. Yeah, you know. Have that to share. Tell us, if somebody, we can put a link to it, but about where to find out about the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, if somebody had any interest in that or something.
Yeah, you could just look it up online. The Firefighter Support Network, like I said, it's, I'd have to pull up the link, but, if you just search that, it should come up, FFCN. They're, like I said, they're nationwide. I've done mentoring for him here and there. Mostly I do the peer support for LA County. I try to focus on that a little more. But when every now and then Debbie will send me an email like, this guy needs support. He could be across the nation, but he's going through the same thing that I went through. So it's just great to have that support. Like I said, I already had my base support, which I didn't lean on Firefighter Support Network too much, but they gave me a lot of resources to keep me going. Some people out there don't have anything, you know, and they need that starting point. So it's, like I said, it's a great support organization. Look them up online. You should be able to find them.
Awesome. Well, I don't think this is the last time you'll be on the show since you're our engineer. Yeah, we roped Kenobi in all the time. So welcome to the,
And you're sweet. Natural.
Yeah, yes. You got that great
voice. I got that great radio voice.
Yeah, it's
welcome to the fire you carry.
And many of you don't know, but Eric was an international punk rock star with an album.
Yes.
And we'll put a
Captain Yoshida.
Somehow we're going to try to download that on a link too, so you can hear that.
That's the name of the band?
Captain Yoshida.
I love it.
Have you ever seen the Captain Yoshida soy sauce? I don't know if it's still around. Yeah, that's where we got the name.
Captain
Perfect. Yo.
Yeah. Roaming around Costco looking for supplies for Mexico.
And there was the name.
One, two, three, four.
Let's call our band that.
Sure.
That's awesome. That's actually a game that we play at my house. We'll hear some phrase or see something like, oh, that'd be a good band name. And
totally.
I've never been in a band. I'm not musical, but it's just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, you might, I mean, everybody is in Black Merkin. So, and I have a feeling that you're going to be
guest
in
guest role
Black Merkin for a song or two
Oh Lord, what am I getting myself into?
Right on. Well, thanks for talking to us, Eric.
No problem.
Close us out.
This has been the Fire You Carry podcast.
Hey, thank you guys so much for listening. It is awesome to have you in the audience. If you would like to talk to Kevin and I, go join our Discord group. The link for that is in the show notes. We're in there with a bunch of podcast listeners and followers. Talk about a lot of stuff over there. It'd be great to have you join us there. If you want to support the podcast, there's a myriad of ways to do that. The links to all that is in the show notes. And if you were curious about the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, thought that that might be something that you wanted to get involved in, whether through donations or actually pointing somebody who needs help in that direction, the link for that is also in the show notes. Go follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and we will see you guys next week. I'm going to go recline.
Well, it is the evening.
Yes, it is.
It's an evening podcast. I've got a smoking jacket on. I would actually really love to some point do this podcast on the app floor so that I could smoke my pipe during
Dude,
the podcast.
That has to happen. Cigar.
I just think that the acoustics out there would be bad.
We got
cars driving by, drunks parking lot next door.
No one having tobacco.
I guess it could just be part of the ambiance. Like, hey, we're sitting outside today.
Little fire pit going.
We don't condone smoking, but we are smoking.
It's horrible.
Are these foam jobs flammable?
Probably. Flammable.
Somebody's going to get burned. But, you know.
And that was the end of the podcast.
And that's when the whole thing ended. And Noel's drinking a Monster at friggin' 6:30 at night.
Don't judge me. I'm tired.
That'd be great if this was like the Hindenburg, dude, and it just went
flaming. The humanity.
It'd probably be a pretty good sound effect.
Oh, the humanity. That, do you know that that was like the the first like news disaster, like filmed?
They got to see like everybody.
No, like it was like the first filmed like disaster.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's when we fell in love with violence. And
yeah,
and
that's see more. All they want now.
Let's see more.
Now KTLA is crazy.
Car chases in Glendale. Yeah.
It's funny how you watch it. It's like, so you hear about somebody get shot, and then it's like every other story after that. This guy got shot. That guy got shot. And then it's carjacking. Oh, this guy got carjacked. That guy.
Yeah.
It's just the feeding frenzy.
Some dude tried to carjack me one time. And I hadn't
put the kibosh on
him. I told you that, didn't I?
Oh.
I was in Long Beach and we were in the ghetto. And I'm stopped. It was one of those. I had a 87 Dodge Horizon. It was a sick $500 vehicle.
Yeah.
But you know those Why little Dodger mini bats?
Yeah.
I had it. I had it right next to me and it was small enough to be between the seat and this console, right?
Yeah.
And this dude is crossing the street and I'm like, dude, I make eye contact with this dude and I'm like, oh, dude. He's looking and he's mean mugging the whole way over, you know, and then he goes up and he puts his hands right on the windowsill because the window's down. He's like, give me your car. Give me your car. And I just went, whap. And I hit him so hard, dude. And he's like, ah, and then carjacking avoidant.
0 to 15 in 60 seconds.
Carjacking avoidant, dude. But that mini bat saved my ride.
Saved your life, dude. You don't need a gun. You just need a mini bat.
Crack them knuckles.
Mm-hmm. But that was a terrible mistake, dude. He went, yeah. Get me out and put it right up.
Big mistake. A lot of people carry bats in their cars, but usually it's in the trunk and it's a full size of mini bat.
No, the mini bat was right here. Yeah. And it's so weird. I'm like, I don't know. We were in the hood, dude. So yeah. I had this mini bat, dude. I don't know what I was going to do.
We got like three or four in the closet because the kids get them. And we're like, yeah, you can't have that because you're going to hit your brother or your sister with it. And no, I don't want to hear it.